Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. President Trump, in his address to Congress last week, said cities like Springfield were being destroyed by immigration. Those remarks caused Springfield Mayor Rob Rue to respond, saying his city was far from being destroyed. While acknowledging the challenges of rapid population growth, the mayor said the great hardship was the mischaracterization of his city over the last several months. To capture the experiences of Haitians living in Springfield, public radio station WYSO in Yellow Springs collaborated with a handful of residents eager to share their stories. It's a series called Haitians in the Heartland. New segments air every Wednesday. And we've invited three participants to join us this hour to learn more about their personal stories and journeys as they became a part of the national debate over immigration. Our first guest is Virginelle Jerome. Welcome to All Sides, Virginelle.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. What made you decide to take part in WYSO's Haitians in the Heartland project?
Well, they extended the invitation, but my reasoning to, you know, accept and collab was I felt like it was necessary and important to share, you know, our stories, and so that others can basically relate and see the human side in our stories, you know?
Yeah. So let's start at the beginning of what led you to leave your home country. I think it could be hard for some Americans to imagine what could make people want to leave their country. And Virginelle, you said you had no choice to leave Haiti because you were a child at the time. You left at age 13. Can you tell me about that time?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was back in 2010. We had the really big earthquake in January of 2010, and basically, you know, houses were destroyed, schools were closed, and my parents were, you know, concerned that our education would be affected. And fortunately, we were able to move to the U.S. so that we can continue our education, as you know. Most Haitian parents put a lot of emphasis on education, you know, stating that that's what's supposed to help you grow and, you know, have a better economic status in this world. So, again, I had no choice. They just up and rooted me and moved me away.
Now, I can the earthquake and how much of Haiti was impacted by that. I can understand that and the idea of moving. But there's also other threats in Haiti not related to a natural disaster. Kidnappings are a real threat. Can you talk about your aunt's experience?
Absolutely. So fast forward to 2019, actually, my aunt and her twins received a kidnapping threat, basically stating that if she did not give 100K plus, and we're talking about US dollars in Haiti, that they would kidnap her two children. They basically gave every description of her whole life story, the kids, their names, the school they attended, dresses, colors that they wore. And so, you know, situations like that are other push factors that drives people out of their home.
Yeah, there's always talk about a lot of gang violence. So these kidnapping threats, they're related to the gangs trying to take over the country.
Correct, yes. And which, you know, they have taken over multiple neighborhoods, cities. They kick people out of their homes. They burn them down if they don't want to use that building. So it's really crazy what's happening in our country right now.
Now, back to you. Once you were in the U.S., why Springfield, Ohio?
Well, I moved to Springfield because my husband was here and I was dealing with a very, very hard pregnancy back then. And I couldn't stay alone in Florida. So it made sense for me to move here since I had to stop working for health reasons. And so that we could be together. He could be my caregiver. So that's why I moved to Springfield.
Okay. So when your parents brought you to the U.S., it was to Florida, though?
Correct. Yes. We moved to Miami, Florida.
Okay. And we're actually going to be talking to your husband in the next segment, so we can find out then what brought him to Springfield. But can you can you talk overall about your experience in the community of Springfield? What is it like living there and how it's changed in recent months because of it becoming a national talking point in the immigration debate?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first got to Springfield, I thought that it was in the middle of nowhere, just being used to such a big city like Miami, fast pace. So I thought it was extremely slow. But I also saw a lot of potential for different cultures to mesh and grow, because I just saw growth because, it's such a small town. But with recent news, I sense fear amongst our community, amongst our people. People are reluctant to go outside. I mean, even us, we try not to go out anymore. I used to love going to the park, walking with my daughter, but I feel like, it's not safe, or I'll be judged, or whatever the situation may be, like there's a target. So I think everybody is, trying to stay sheltered, sheltering their family and kids, just because the environment has changed, the energy has shifted a lot.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Virginelle Jerome, a U.S. citizen originally from Haiti who lives in Springfield and is a part of WYSO's radio series, Haitians in the Heartland. And I wanted to say that you feel uncomfortable walking around, even going to the park, but you're a U.S. citizen, right?
Absolutely, but you also have native-born citizens that are, taking the wrath of this whole situation just because they look like me, and you get mistaken for a Haitian person. I mean, I am Haitian, but again, it no longer feels as welcoming as it used to be. Though we do get a lot of support from the natives here. But once again, just by looking at me, you don't know what my status is, and I don't think that should be important as long as it is legal, which it is. But this is just the situation we currently live.
I'm not sure how old your daughter is, but do you consider her? I mean, you maybe you call yourself a Haitian American, but do you consider her an American citizen, American first?
That's a good question. I think we consider her Haitian American just because, we're both native Haitians, and we're pouring Haitian Creole into her. She'll also be learning French just so that she can basically preserve that Haitian culture that she may not ever really experience if our country does not get better. So we feel like it's our job and duty to teach her Haitian side, which we're very proud of.
I want to revisit some of the ways that Springfield and the Haitian community specifically came into political view. So it started last September on the campaign trail. Then Vice Presidential candidate J.D. Vance lied and said that Haitian migrants were eating pets in Springfield. And then candidate for president Donald Trump amplified that on the debate stage. He and Vance both continued to perpetuate the falsehood, even though Springfield officials repeatedly said it wasn't true. There were bomb threats for schools and buildings were closed. There was a bigger law enforcement presence. What do you think when you think back to that time, hearing these things about your community from candidates who were trying to be president and vice president?
First off, it was very chaotic, but then it really shows the power of words. In this case, very false accusations, but yet just that simple sentence has such a ripple effect on people's lives. Again, businesses are being closed, people are scared to go out. Bomb threats, like you said, so now parents are rushing to get their kids out. The children are confused. They're getting bullied. So there is so many effects from that false accusation that's a result, that's resulting from that. And once again, the psychological effect that these kids now have to experience and endure, that's one aspect that I feel like people tend to ignore. And it's sad. It's sad.
And as president, Trump highlighted Springfield in his executive order on immigration, vowing to deport Haitian residents, who even those who are there legally. Most recently, President Trump, in his address before Congress, blamed the Biden administration for the influx of migrants and then zeroed in on the town again. Let's listen.
Entire towns like Aurora, Colorado, and Springfield, Ohio, buckled under the weight of the migrant occupation and corruption like nobody's ever seen before. Beautiful towns destroyed.
When you hear something like that, does that make you want to move away from Springfield, or do you still feel like you have community there?
It's a little bit of both. Just because that's not the kind of spotlight one is seeking. To me, it's very negative, but also it makes me want to stick around just to be the voice and an advocate, for my community, my people. Because once again, I see the opposite, you know. Us coming to Springfield, I feel like brought, well, not even feel, I can see the result of innovation. You know, there were new businesses. And you see multiple restaurants popping up. Downtown is different now. And again, as a result of our collaboration in Springfield.
Yeah, the Springfield mayor, Rob Rue, issued a statement after that address to Congress saying, "The city of Springfield has not been destroyed. On the contrary, we're seeing economic growth and new housing developments. Community leaders are actively collaborating and making decisions to move the city forward." So he acknowledged that the city has experienced strain on resources, but a majority of the migrants, he says, live peacefully. And he said that the greatest hardship in the last 6 months is the mischaracterization of his city. So I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, hearing that from the mayor. Do you believe him? Do you feel like there are officials in Springfield, even if the federal government's not on your side? Do you feel like Springfield is on your side?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I myself got the honor to participate in a couple meetings alongside our other, colleagues, and met with, a couple city officials. And yes, like, there were a ton of support. They were willing to sit down with us and basically ask, how can they help? What can they do? Like, how could we work together to debunk those misconceptions, false accusations, disinformation, basically. And we've done a couple of events around town, and we've had, good turnarounds, residents of Springfield showing up to support. It's nice to see, I can say that in the midst of all the chaos, you see the good in other people as well.
It is worth noting 64% of Clark County, the county you're in, voted for the Trump Vance ticket for president. So you have to feel that there's a mix there then, right? Is Springfield different than all of Clark County?
Well, I can't say for all of Clark County, because once again, I'm so busy being a new mom and working and school at the same time. Mm. But yeah, I'll say so. You do see different things on the news. You hear different things. You hear different opinions, which is normal. And I think that's what makes the world what it is, just the differences. So yes, Springfield has a mix, definitely. And I'll say, I have encountered this current administration voters, but yet that are still supportive,
Yeah. You and your husband had a furniture business, though, and you shut that down. Was that a result of all of this rhetoric surrounding Haitians, or did something else happen to the business?
Correct. During that time, our community basically called on us, mostly my husband. I can't take the credit there. And so we did not have time to attend to our personal business. And then like I stated before, the fear around town. So there were less customers, less people out. And so as a result, we had to shut down.
Mm. You also are spending some time working as a translator, helping with language, filling out documents. Do people jump to conclusions whenever someone doesn't quickly learn English?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. They might think that you're illiterate or, you don't know anything. And they might doubt your intellectual, if I can say it that way. And again, I feel like my job is to be an advocate for those people. I always take the time to say, oh, by the way, did you know that so and so was, an attorney back home? Cannot tell you anything besides good morning. He basically looks like a mute, but he is a very brilliant guy, So yes, there's a huge misconception when you don't know a language, especially in our case, if you do not speak English, they just assume that you don't know much, which is far from reality.
Are you encouraging people to learn English, or because you mentioned before you want to keep your home language, the Haitian language, alive, even with your daughter? Is it you know, does it? I guess it has to be a hard thing to say, you should learn English.
Absolutely. I mean, I speak multiple languages and I think there's beauty in it. I think my dad used to always say, similar to the saying, if you read from multiple books, how does the saying go? Can't really remember at this moment, but basically, it's almost like you're more than one person. You're able to think differently. You're able to understand different perspectives. So I always encourage people to learn English, but in the meantime, when you need something important to get done right away and you do not know the language, absolutely I will help you. And same thing with my daughter. She's one. She mostly understands English, but we still speak Creole to her. I'm still trying to teach her Haitian Creole, French, some Spanish here and there. But yeah, so the more you know, the better. And it's just beautiful.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time, and good luck with everything you have going on in your personal life and raising a 1-year-old. So,
Thank you.
that's Virginelle Jerome, one of the voices in the Haitians in the Heartland series from WYSO Radio in Yellow Springs. Virginelle, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And we're going to talk to two more Haitian residents in the series, including Virginelle's husband, in just a moment. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This hour, we're talking with Springfield residents from Haiti, taking part in a special series called Haitians in the Heartland. It's presented by WYSO, the public radio station in Yellow Springs, and segments air every Wednesday. It's a collaboration between WYSO's Eichelberger Center for Community Voices and the Haitian Community Alliance. And joining us now is Lucans Mezies, who is also featured in the Haitians in the Heartland series. Welcome to All Sides, Lucans.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. And in a moment, we'll be joined by Virginelle Jerome's husband, who is going to be joining us soon. He's having a technical difficulty. But Lucans, I will start with you. You moved to the U.S. about 7 years ago with your wife, who was expecting your second daughter. And unfortunately, you had to leave your first daughter, who was born in Haiti. She remained in Haiti with relatives. That had to be a very difficult choice. You shared that choice with WYSO listeners in the series Haitians in the Heartland. Can you tell me about that choice? Why did you feel like you needed to leave?
Leaving Haiti was one of the hardest decisions of my life. The rising violence, instability, and lack of opportunities left me with no choice but to seek a better future, like many immigrants. I didn't leave because I wanted to. I left because I had to. You know, the most painful part of my journey was being separated from my daughter, Marley. Every time she asked, "Daddy, when are you coming back for me?" You know, it broke my heart. You know, I carried that guilt every day, but I knew I was working towards a better life for the family. When we finally reunited, it was one of the most emotional and joyful moments, you know, for the family. My wife, you know, Sifu, and my second daughter, you know, we were excited to see, you know, Mali.
Yeah, you said you felt like you had no choice but to leave Haiti. Why was that? You were being threatened?
Yeah, the rising violence, you know, instability, you know, and lack of opportunities, you know, in Haiti. So, you know, I left because I had to.
And how did you end up in Springfield, Ohio?
So when I first came, I was Florida. Mm-hmm. For 4 months, and aftermath, I moved to Ohio Springfield, you know, just because I got a friend. She was living at Indiana, and then she went on to say that, "Lookins, you can come to Indiana," but by the time to move to Indiana, she moved to Ohio Springfield, and then, you know, I ended up to Springfield like this.
So you ended up in Springfield because a friend of yours was here.
Yes.
And you had a connection already. Did it have anything to do with a job, or did you find a job after you came to Springfield?
Yeah, but yeah, she explained it to me, like, the cost of living, you know, jobs, opportunities.
So more opportunities in Springfield than you could find in Florida.
Yes, yes.
So you talked about that guilt you felt having to leave your older daughter in Haiti while you tried to establish a life here in the United States. You were reunited with Marley a few years later, and we're going to hear some audio from WYSO series. It's a clip with you and both of your daughters. I want to play this exchange between you and Marley.
Okay.
What has been the hardest thing about adjusting to life in America?
Going back to redo my grade.
You know, you just came to the U.S. and so I wanted you to go back to fifth grade. And you said, no. I said, Marley, you have to go back to fifth grade because, you know, you just came to the U.S., so you have to learn more English, you know. And you said, okay, Dad.
The hardest thing was that when I got into class and I had to present myself in front of everyone, they spread rumors about, I was friends with them anyway. There's some that left the school because they felt insecure and they homeschool.
And Lukens, what did she mean by other students felt insecure and now they're homeschooled?
You know, so by the time, you know, 5 months passing with the rhetoric things going on, you know, dog and cats, students keep asking questions to Sephora and you know, Mali all the time. And then when they get home, and then they ask me questions about it, you know. And this is because she said that, like, you know, she just, you know, a newcomer. And then, you know, most students, you know, white students. And they know that she's a Haitian. And, you know, they keep asking questions all the time.
Yeah. Our first guest, Virginelle, talked about how in Haiti, parents really emphasize education, how important education is. So, I mean, despite how she feels sometimes in school, I'm sure. Do you feel like it, you know, school is very important?
Yeah, school is very important for us. You know, you know, our family emphasize school. Like, you know, my mom, you know, always, you know, get out, like, you know, sweat and tears to see how they can, you know, get money for you to pursue your education. You know, it's a must do for us, like, you know, in Haiti, going to school.
This is All Sides, and we're talking about a new audio series from WYSO called Haitians in the Heartland. And we're featuring a few people in the series. You were just listening to Lucan's Mezzies. And joining us now, let me get back there. Joining us now is, earlier in the show, we heard from Virginelle Jerome. And now joining us is her husband, Miguelito Jerome, who goes by Miguel. Welcome, Miguel.
Hi.
How you doing? Right.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us. So let's start with the story of why you left Haiti. We heard your wife's story in the first segment. We heard Lucan's story. Why did you decide that you needed to leave Haiti?
You know, Haiti, thank you for having me again, Amy. So Haiti at some point when I decided to leave, because, you know, quite honestly, it's one of the country that, you know, I cherish. I used to travel back and forth, coming to the States and, you know, do many projects. But at some point, it was hard to leave. You know, I ended up hiding myself for the longest, for about a year or so, not trying to be public or not trying to do what I used to do best, you know, which is going out and conduct many trainings and help people, empower women, empower teachers, business people, organizations, which is pretty much a way that me, my father, and the whole family, we used to thrive in Haiti, you know. So at some point, we were targeted, of course, because we're traveling and going to all these places. I ended up canceling and all these activities that I used to do. I ended up not posting even online, trying to stay safe. You know, me and my father, we started doing radio station quite a bit, probably 10 years prior to that. So we ended up really hiding ourselves. So at some point, it was really, life wasn't it, you know, the country that I used to really talk about, you know, I was, you know, and I think Lucans will agree that we're really proud of being Haitians. You know, it's one of the things that we enjoy being, but insecurities and gang violence kind of took off.
Yeah. And so you were kind of like a public figure. So you felt like there was basically a target on your back, that you didn't feel safe in Haiti any longer.
That's correct. That's correct. And then it was at this point, we were like, okay, now we need to put ourselves, our lives, like put ourselves in a safe position, like all our collaborators that could actually travel to DR, to the neighbor countries or other countries, they would go, and their family too would be like, stop doing what you're doing, because are you you know, not okay, are you stubborn or something? Because it was at in that level. So me and myself, I ended up coming 2021, and since then, it got worse and worse. The president was assassinated a couple months after. So at this point, I was like, wow, I don't recognize the country. And it was really hard to feel that moment when you say, oh my gosh, I might not go back anytime soon to my country.
Yeah. So how did you end up in Springfield, Ohio, of all places?
Yes, I'm in Springfield, Ohio. At that time when I came in 2021, there was a couple people that was joining me, because again, they knew me online. They were following my pages, and they know that I used to really help people in so many aspects of the lives. And that growing Haitian community here in Springfield was already a thing, you know, in 2021, or it was building or growing, right? So they, a couple of people called me and they were like, Amigo, I know that you ended up leaving Haiti and you're here now. Can you come over and try to help us with many activity they had, or even had that church that called me to actually have an English class for their people. So I ended up coming here to precisely come to translate and help in English, and help people navigate in the U.S. So that was my call. And when I came, I came just for a week or 2 weeks, quite honestly, because I wanted to go back and forth from Florida to Ohio. But when I came out, I saw the need. I saw that it's really important to people like me and, you know, and others, to help the community, that community growing, because the Haitians were already there working, but they needed They needed guidance, all the jobs, they needed translators, in healthcare and so many other aspects in Springfield. So I was like, this is a chance for me to keep doing what I used to do in Haiti, which is really helping people.
Yeah. And Virginelle said that you took her from big city life in Miami to Springfield, Ohio, much more of a small town feel. But then she's grown to love the city. Do you feel an affection for Springfield despite the national spotlight that it's had?
Yeah. And it's weird that, you know, despite, just like you said, of, you know, all that, people now know Springfield in that sense. But we living in Springfield, that when I came to Springfield, people of Springfield welcomed us, you know, not only the Haitians, but also the fact that when we came, it was needed. Like, people were like, okay, there were people in Springfield, they are so welcoming, right? And they would invite us, and we'll go to so many things, do so many things with together. We had the Haitian Flag Day, which was a big event. Me and Lukens, we organized that, and it was all the, we had more local people, American, unquote, people coming to that Haitian flag event than Haitians, you know, at this. So it was a success, and we were so happy that we could grow together. People would start investing. I helped people buy houses. I helped people, implement themselves or integrate better in the community, you know. And whenever they had some misunderstanding in both sides, I would come and help. And that's when I was like, Virginia, you need to help me here because you have more experience than me. And you would definitely help. Of course, she's a city girl, but coming here kind of reminds us of where we're from too in Haiti, because I'm from Germany, Virginelle too. And in Germany, it's quite a small town, and you know each other. We are like the small town reality, where everything seems quiet, you know, calm. You can enjoy your life. It's really family oriented. So that's why we saw in Springfield and an opportunity to grow together in the community.
And this question can be for both of you, but we can have Lukens answer first. The temporary protected status has been a boon for immigrants in Springfield. Being able to come here from Haiti to be protected from, you know, all of the violence in Haiti, and then be able to get jobs here with that legal status. But that status is supposed to, it was supposed to go till 2026, but the Trump administration has said that they will revoke the TPS status in August of this year instead. What will that impact be for you? Lukens? I think you muted yourself if you're still there. So maybe.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yep, we got it. Okay. So can okay. you, yeah, tell me about Sorry. The TPS status. That's okay.
Yeah. So as a Haitian with TPS, the discussions about mass deportation and changes to our studies are alarming. Haiti, women's unsafe, and many of us have built our lives here, working, paying taxes, and contributing to our communities. Ending TPS without a real solution will put thousands of families in limbo. You know, so it's tomorrow, anything can happen. You know, people, we just waiting on June, what the government gonna be saying about it. So, you know, people are scared, you know. So when you don't have any, you know, legal studies, you cannot go to work. So you have to provide for your family, you know. So we keep overthinking what's going to be happening tomorrow.
Yeah. And Miguel, if you want to weigh in there, I mean, you're helping people learn English. You're helping them buy houses. What is the TPS status possibly being changed, this summer mean to you?
I mean, you know, having just like Lickens was saying, having a status, legal status here in the United States, it's the key of everything. And it's worse when you had it and you were growing and you were establishing yourself in a country and they ripped that from you. It's just like, you know, pretty much shooting you in the leg or something, or in the head at this point. That's how bad it is, because at this point, these people will have to probably lose all they have, leave the country, go to Haiti, or I don't know, panic. That's the situation right now. People are panicking, and going back to Haiti, it's definitely not safe for them. And in most scenario, they might get even, tortured or hurt or killed in Haiti, depending on what they used to. Some of these Haitian and folks, I recommend them to really pursue other type of layers of protection, like the asylum and other status that can actually, depending on the cases, help them really to have some type of peaceful minds, in that turmoil situation. Because right now, but some people cannot because the asylum, again, you have to be in the States, within, we have to apply within a year. So after that year, it's really complicated to even get accepted to have that asylum. So it's a really bad situation, knowing that since 2010, you had people that came. Let's say you came with your husband and kids, you're on the TPS. There is no way to get residency or the green card from that. So meaning you have to stay in the TPS because that's how the states, decided to, because the TPS never led to a permanent status. But now to just, instead of just looking and say it, or instead of bringing a solution or something, I've heard so many things. I've heard, okay, let's put the people on TPS to go through some type of education process, or depending on the assets that they have in the United States, or depending on the ties that they have, that might, I heard so many things and so many laws. But to be like, okay, I don't know, 600,000 Venezuelan, 500,000 Haitians gone. It's worse because, again, these people cannot just leave the country just like that. They have to provide to their family. They had businesses, they had houses, they were teachers, they were workers. So what do you tell them to do right now?
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I don't think that you or I know the answer at this moment. So that is Miguelito Jerome, who goes by Miguel. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Lucans Mezies, thank you, Lucans, for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
And they both are featured in WYSO's series, Haitians in the Heartland. Coming up, we're going to talk to a community leader who is helping Haitians in Springfield try to find a path forward. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about Haitians in Springfield and the launch of a series that highlights their lives and experiences there. It's a collaboration between WYSO's Eichelberger Center for Community Voices and the Haitian Community Alliance. We spent the show up until now talking with people featured in the series. Now we're going to talk about on-the-ground efforts in Springfield to assist Haitian residents who are fearful of deportation under the Trump administration. Joining us now is Valais Dorsaville. He is the executive director of the Haitian Community Help and Support Center. Welcome back to All Sides.
Thank you for having me.
So the Trump administration made good on its promise of immigration crackdowns. Also, we talked in the last segment about the temporary protective status. Instead of going till 2026, it's now going to probably change in the summer. What are you hearing from the Haitian community that you serve? What are they most worried about right now?
Basically, I think that it's an unfortunate news for them because reducing the expiration date of the TPS from February 3rd, 2026 to August 3rd, 2025 is like, it's like a little bit shocking for them because they did not believe that the administration would have taken such a move. So I think they are living in a state of uncertainty now, not knowing what will happen, even though there are some organizations who are filing some lawsuits. But up to now, we don't know what the result of those will be.
Now, are there concerns about parents and children being separated? I'm sure that some parents and some children have different status when it comes to how they're here.
Yeah, and this is the concern because there are some kids who were born here in the USA, and the might be the case where the separation is evident when it comes to that move the administration has taken. So what we do is to help those parents to develop like some kind of personal plan in case that happens for the kids not to left out without having any person watching over them. So this is what we are about to do with the local, the Haitians here in Springfield.
Yeah, and I heard that your organization is distributing what you're calling red cards. Tell me what those are or what they say.
Basically, the red cards, we are sharing them with the folks who do not speak English in case they are encountering with an ICE officers. They might handle the cards to them, hand out the card to them because the card has some, the idea is very clear on the cards that they have the right to remain silent and they will speak when they have an attorney because we try to help them to understand that they have the right to remain silent and ask her to speak to an attorney in case that they are facing those kind of ICE agents.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Haitian community in Springfield with Valais Dorseville, Executive Director of the Haitian Community Help and Support Center. I wanted to pivot to Governor DeWine for a minute. At a recent press event, he was asked about President Trump's immigration plan, and DeWine expressed support for efforts to bring order to the southern border. But he said that he said it's hard to have an intelligent conversation about who should be allowed to stay into this country until illegal immigration is settled. He went on to say that the United States has a history of being a compassionate country. And then he pivoted his comments directly to Springfield. Here's what he said.
I've been very clear, you know, something that we've watched very, very closely here is in Springfield. And all I can do is tell you what the businessmen and women who have hired Haitians there have said. And what they've said is we hired them because, number one, we couldn't find other people to work. They were here legally, so we could hire them. And despite cultural challenges and language challenges, they show up for work, they're good workers, and if they were not here tomorrow, we don't know how we'd keep this line running. We don't know how we would be able to be at full capacity. And so if you took those, you know, if the question is if you took those Haitians away immediately overnight, I will tell you the business people there will tell you that's going to be a big problem for the economy of the community.
Are you working with the business community in Springfield? Are they speaking out and hoping that, you know, deportations do not happen?
The thing is, we have like a new group called Springfield Neighbors United that we've been working with, trying to get more employers out to talk. So for them just to express how that's going to be impactful if tomorrow the Haitians are not here in Springfield. So I think that we've started this initiative with this group, Springfield Neighbors United, just to show support to the immigrants and also get as many employers as possible out just to talk and say how important the presence of Haitians are in Springfield for them.
Do you feel like even though Springfield has been thrust into the national spotlight, you know, President Trump brought it up in the debate with the lies about the pets, and then he also brought it up in his address to Congress. Do you feel like Springfield's being targeted? Are you hearing people are thinking about moving so that maybe they can stay here longer if they leave Springfield?
I am not sure of that. I think that after the inauguration, a few people left believing that the massive deportation that he campaigned on would have started in Springfield. But normally it was not a mass exodus, but a few people left out of concerns. But now, by the fact that they see that it happens elsewhere instead of happening in Springfield, they tend to stay here and observe to see what will happen next. So far, they are here, and I haven't heard people leaving Springfield and anymore. So they're just like being here, being observant of what might be happening later on.
Several months ago, there were some Springfield residents who spoke out. They were unhappy with the increase in immigrant population. The count is hard, but some say it's 12,000 or 15,000 people. They complained about crowding in schools and housing shortages and all the language challenges. Do you feel like those are still problems that you are dealing with, or have some of those issues with school crowding and language issues being solved?
I am sure that the local authorities and Governor DeWine himself have been contributing just to make sure that those challenges are being faced and solved. So I think that we are at a level where everybody is okay and keep moving forward, because you know that it's a question of time just to address some of the issues. And I believe that a good job has been done in this area, and we are optimistic that the community is moving forward pretty good.
Do you feel, you mentioned that you have these red cards that you're handing out, and it tells people not to speak unless they have a lawyer. Do you have enough lawyers in Springfield to help with all of this at the moment?
I think that there is a shortage of attorneys in Ohio in general. Mm-hmm. We've been working with ABLE, and I think that they have been doing a very good job assisting people. We try just to make sure that we do as best as we can just to help them to get a legal representative. But we are aware as well there is that shortage of lawyer in the state.
And I wanted to get your take on, there's a case right now of a Palestinian graduate student and activist at Columbia University who was arrested, and the Trump administration is trying to deport him, but the action was blocked because he's actually here legally. Do you have people who are here legally, but they're worried about speaking out, they're worried about drawing attention to themselves, but you need the help, you need certain people to be spokespeople, right?
Yeah, basically that's the case, and they are worried the fact that the administration is not clear in terms of who they are looking for. At some point they say they are looking for criminals, and at some point they are targeting other people even though they are here legally. So by the fact that they are not clear about the immigration move, that kind of put some folks, even though they are here legally, in a mood of panic. So yeah, and some people just try to hide, not to normally attract attention to them. So it's just the case because the move of the administration is just unclear.
Right. Do you have, I played that cut earlier from Governor DeWine. Do you have faith in Governor DeWine versus the federal government? Do you think that the state or even the mayor of Springfield will help support the Haitian community once the TPS status is changed?
And I think that the responsibility of the federal government is to listen to the state governor and the local authorities, because they are living with the people on a daily basis and they know them better than them. So I think before taking any move, it should be wise for the federal government to hear what the local authorities have to say. So if the local authorities say that the people here in Springfield are okay and everybody is moving forward for the betterment of the community, I think they should listen to that instead of normally taking other moves that would normally harm the community, that could normally put the community down. So I am thankful to Governor DeWine by the fact that he has been vocal about the contribution of the Haitians here in Springfield and also the inclusive leadership approach of the local authorities. I am so grateful to that. And it's, they're just telling the truth.
I want to say thank you to Viles Dorsaville, Executive Director of the Haitian Community Help and Support Center. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can listen to Haitians in the Heartland. New episodes drop every Wednesday. It's from WYSO's Eichelberger Center for Community Voices and the Haitian Community Alliance. You can find more at wyso.org. This is All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.